Two more presidential bets distance themselves from Manila Mayor Isko Moreno's call for Vice President Lenny Robredo to quit the race for Malacañang. Later on in Focus, we'll speak with veteran campaign strategist Alan Herman on how effective candidates have gotten their message across to voters. Russia launches its major offensive in eastern Ukraine. And the World Bank slashing its global economic growth forecast this year amid the war in Ukraine. Hi, I'm Carmina Consentino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, two more presidential candidates distancing themselves from Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Domagoso's call for Vice President Lenny Robredo to withdraw from the presidential race. Former Defense Secretary Norberto Gonzalez says he was taken aback when Moreno made that plea during the joint press conference this past Sunday. Gonzalez now apologizing to the Vice President.
There was no intention of asking the Vice President to withdraw. I think Mayor Isko may have been carried away in the heat of the question and answer, but there was no agreement whatsoever that we will ask anyone to withdraw. I'm apologizing to her because what we need is something better after the elections, whoever wins.
The campaign team of another presidential candidate, Senator Manny Pacquiao, relieved he did not make it to Sunday's press conference given the direction the event took.
I don't believe anything was achieved by that press con. Senator Pacquiao believes that the choice is up to the people and not from any calls for others to withdraw. It's quite illogical to be for anybody to be withdrawing at the last minute. We're only 20 days away from elections, and we've gone through so many time, effort, and expenses.
Another presidential bet who attended that press conference, Senator Panfilo Lacson, earlier distanced himself from Moreno's statement. Well, for the Robredo campaign, there's no need to issue an apology over the call for the vice president's withdrawal from the presidential race. Her spokesperson, attorney Barry Gutierrez, says while they appreciate the gesture, their camp is not really bothered by such calls. He asserts their focus now is to further strengthen their campaign with less than a month left before the elections.
Malaya naman ang sino mang kandidato na mag-issue ng anumang panawagan, di ba? Sa totoo lang, hindi ako na-bother at si VP Lenny hindi na-bother nung call ni Isko na, di ba, mag-withdraw ka. Di ba, posisyon niya yun, di ba? Kung paniniwala talaga niya yun, di sige lang. Ako at kami, di ba, parang klaro din naman, di ba, na sige, may baganya kang panawagan. Respectfully, hindi kami sumasang-ayon, di ba? At tutuloy kami sa election na to. Hindi na namin kailangan magpatawag ng press conference para sabihin lang na tutuloy kami. Kasi klaro naman yun eh.
The tandem of Vice President Lenny Robredo and Senator Kiko Pangilinan back on the campaign trail. This time, they're in Zambales. Our correspondent, Adrian Ayala, now joins us with the latest from there. Adrian, over to you.
Carmina, it's not just a country sovereignty over the West, but you see that she's fighting for bottom-up grand fishermen as well. Vice President and her meet Senator Pangilinan, we're in Narciso Town in Zambales this morning, where they held a dialogue with members and women as well. VP Lenny told her
Adrian, sorry to cut you there, but you're coming in choppy. Please keep your line open. We're going to try and call you back soon as we can. Our correspondent there, Adrian Ayalin, joining us on the line from Zambales. Adrian has been shadowing the campaign of Vice President Lenny Robredo and her running mate, Senator Kiko Pangilinan. Well, exactly 20 days to go before the presidential polls. Have the candidates gotten their message across to voters effectively? On In Focus today, we're joined by veteran campaign strategist Alan Herman. Alan, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Carmina. Always a pleasure. And good afternoon to all of the viewers and listeners.
All right. 20 days to go before May 9. First of all, I want to get your description. How would you describe the campaign season so far?
I would say it's unprecedented in terms of the use of social media, in terms of candidate accountabilities. I mean, choosing not to attend fora, choosing not to attend debates. It's really something we haven't seen before. And also unprecedented in terms of the way mass movements have really, there has been an uptick towards the end of the election period in terms of rallies and, you know, volunteerism. It's really an election not quite as we've seen before.
And also, you got to add into the equation the surveys that are being put out there. Unprecedented as well, would you say, as to how people have taken to those surveys or have largely ignored as well the survey results? What can you say about that, Alan?
Well, I'll never be one to discredit a well-done, statistically sound, research-based survey. But I think two things are in focus here on May 9. I think, number one, obviously, which candidate will win out, and two, how accurate these surveys are. There, because of the huge margin that the front runner has, there has been much scrutiny on whether these surveys are, in fact, accurate, or at least that accurate, in predicting voter behavior. But we shall see. We shall see. Like I said, a survey is a surveyor coming to your house and asking you a question in the comfort of your own home while you're drinking your juice and eating your sandwich. I think what mimics an election exercise more is you going out, lining up, joining a rally under the heat of the sun, and really participating in an event. I think that would simulate election day more. So we'll see. It's an interesting juxtaposition.
Alan, do you have reason to believe that those who were surveyed were not being truthful when they were asked?
Well, there's two things at play here. First is, I think even the survey firms themselves have admitted that the statistical weighting in terms of socioeconomic class was not as accurate as they would like it to be. That's one. Secondly, yes, there are factors that will affect how a respondent will reply to a survey. Even the color of the shirt that the survey taker is wearing will affect it, or if they feel that their local government unit is supportive of a candidate. So we'll see that if these factors did skew the results.
Mm-hmm. But as a veteran campaign strategist, Alan, do you have reason not to believe the surveys that are being put out there?
Again, tricky, because I use surveys in our discipline. Surveys are a very useful and efficient tool for us. But I can't make odds or ends of the numbers in terms of putting actual voter numbers to the percentages. Mm. Given that, for example, VP Lenny got 14.5 million votes last 2016. And this is not an apples to oranges comparison. She was then running against former Senator Marcos Jr., who ended up with 14.1 million votes. So I can't quite reconcile the fact that it seems that there were people who voted in 2016 for VP Lenny who are not voting for her now. And frankly, I can't make sense of that because I haven't met anybody.
Let's go back to the campaign trail. 20 days before D-Day, where should the respective campaigns be at this point?
I think, geographically at least, Visayas for me is the key area. I think they should already be consolidating the Visayas area and NCR plus. That of course, will represent the largest number of voting base. But right now, you're looking really to consolidate what we call voter protection, the stay votes, make sure that they do vote for you, and then try to get a bit of the sway vote. Now, the stray votes, meaning to say the areas wherein you're not so you know that there's very little chance of you converting voters. 20 days before, you don't really pay much attention to those areas anymore.
And do you think that the candidates are responding to this, are doing exactly what they should be doing 20 days to go before May 9?
Absolutely. They're conducting events in terms of geography. You can see that some of them will even mirror each other, meaning to say a candidate A will have an event in an area and then days later, if not the next day, candidate B will follow. So they are following a very scientific and very numbers-based methodology in terms of mapping out their last candidate.
What could derail their campaigns at this point?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about all the candidates, that Sunday press con was a game changer. I don't know what the thinking or the logic behind that that Sunday press con was. I think that adversely affected some candidates. I mean, just even in terms of optics and the fact that they're going on the mic and saying we're the survey laggards, but please, we're still in the race. I think the overall effect was just really left a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of people. So I think some of their votes may go to the two front runners. I think that was a game changer right there.
But if you analyze that, what happened last Sunday, Alan, what strategy was at play there? Was there even any?
If there was a strategy, it's not something I'm familiar with. I really can't see the logic of engaging in such an activity, especially for Manila Mayor Isko and Senator Ping, having to, you know, even just the optics of them being with the tail ender in the same press conference, rather than bringing themselves up, they actually put themselves towards the bottom of the race. So I really don't understand. And it was, again, the classic press con that should have been an email, and even in their messaging, they were not united in their messaging. So it served to cause confusion and discontentment among some of their voters, and made them question the motives of these candidates as to why they are running. In fact,
well, when you look at the roster of gentlemen present in that Easter press con, Alan, all of them laggards, all of them falling behind, save for one, and that Senate President Tito Soto. Do you feel that he sort of lost big time by attending that press conference?
In fact, I would call him the biggest loser in terms of optics and messaging and branding. Because again, you are one of the front runners. You're within striking distance of second place. And then here you are in a table of self-admitted survey laggards. So I really can't ascertain the wisdom behind this this press con.
So when we go back to your earlier point about this time around just still having stray votes and soft votes out there, first of all, I want to ask you, are there still soft votes as we speak 20 days to go before Election Day?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The Filipino voter is notoriously fickle. In fact, a lot of them will change their votes on Election Day. So, I mean, when they're actually in the polling precinct, in their respective precinct, they will actually, some of them will even have a change of heart right there and then. So, yes, this has been validated by studies before, that there is still time to change people's minds and hearts.
And with what happened last Easter, do you think that that may have caused an impact on these soft votes that you speak of?
Yes, substantially. I think a lot of these voters who are supportive of the Easter press con candidates were dislodged and became even softer. I mean, you can even see this anecdotally on social media, wherein people are saying, "Wow, you know, I got turned off by candidate X, so I switched to candidate Y." Mm. Candidate X being a participant in the Easter press con.
Mm. But you said it yourself, unprecedented as well this whole campaign season because of everything that's happening on social media. I mean, as a campaign strategist, which one do you believe? There's different silos there on social media at play as we speak.
You know, the proof of the pudding is always in the tasting. So if you're judging it by the surveys and who seems to be on top, then I would say that Marcos Jr. did the best in terms of his social media performance. In the first place, he had the most baggage. I mean, you're talking about former dictator's son and namesake. You're talking about allegations and Supreme Court cases weighing them down. And yet they were able to turn it around. And I really believe that social media played about 80% of that in terms of historical revisionism, really building a myth and trying to create this whole impression of the martial law days as the golden era.
Let's talk about his campaign, being the survey front runner. Is he comfortable where he's at right now? What should he do? What shouldn't he do? 20 days before May 9th?
You know, Carmina, I wouldn't even use the word comfortable. You know, I think there's almost a sense of entitlement almost in their camp, in the way they're behaving. If you look at all of their media releases, for example, it's always spokesperson for presidential front runner. And the way they are behaving in terms of public forums and debates, and we don't need to be there, we're on top. It's really that, it's almost a sense of hubris, if you want to put it that way. What should he be doing? There's a saying, if it isn't broken, then don't fix it. He seems to be content in the way the campaign is being run. I think the brain trust of that campaign is seeing that they haven't done anything gigantically wrong. So I think they will stay the course and behave this way until the voting day.
Here's the thing, though, Alan. They've been consistent. All the speeches are the same. No matter where he goes, it's unity, it's jobs, all those promises. But there hasn't been any opportunity to ask how he's going to deliver that. And why do you think people, his supporters, are not even asking how, but just really taking in those promises?
You know, there's a very technical term for what's happening right now. Unfortunately, it's not a very flattering term, but, you know, this is what we call glimmered. The people are glimmered. It's a promise of something nice and beautiful, and it sounds so good. You'd be an awful person if you opposed unity, for example. But they're not really inclined to dig into it because they're glimmered by this whole promise of unity with, really, as you mentioned, it's not being substantiated. That's one. Number two, you know, the flip side of that is it's almost an anti-establishment vote. It's almost an anti-intellectual, anti-elite vote, which is ironic considering that the candidate really did come from a very, shall we say, class A background and upbringing.
But what if that is their strategy?
There's also part of that.
But what if that is their strategy, Alan? I mean, you, for one, would be able to see what's happening. What if the strategy is say this now and substantiate it later because they're really working on that? Is that possible?
It most assuredly is possible, and that has been their strategy. And that's why this, you know, decades from now, we'll look back at this election and it will determine how future elections will be conducted. Because if the candidate who doesn't want to face the public, who is actually courting their votes, yet refuses to be subjected to any form of scrutiny or questioning, win, then you can imagine that future candidates will do exactly the same thing, which is a sad commentary on where we are, perhaps, socio-politically.
How would you explain, you mentioned the term glimmered, but how would you explain the fact that across social classes, there are those who support him? There are those who believe in the promise of a Marcos presidency?
I haven't seen the results from the A. I mean, I'm sure there are. I'm not sure the results from the A and B class will necessarily show that his support is as strong. But again, it's a promise of unity and bringing back the golden era of economic prosperity, and you know, when crime is low, infrastructure is high, everybody. Everybody is, there's food on the table, there's education for the children. Who wouldn't want that? I suppose the sad part is people aren't really going to the next step of that journey and asking how exactly are we going to do this third.
Conversely, though, we go to the other side now. Vice President Leni Robredo, let's look at how she's been conducting her campaign. 20 days before May 9, is she where she is supposed to be?
Well, I think undeniably the momentum has shifted to VP Leni's camp. If you want to liken it to a basketball game, it's the fourth quarter, the time is running out, but the team is going on a run. I think even the survey results will validate that as far as games are concerned. You know, she's pushing a message of radical love, of integrity, and you can see this in her rallies. The people are happy, they're dancing. I mean, I haven't seen anything like it. This is inspiring volunteerism across the country. And, you know, the atmosphere is just that. It's overwhelming joy. It's overwhelming inspiration. And if I was going to be a candidate in an election, this is the messaging I would want.
But the messaging came rather belatedly. Alan, as a campaign strategist, did you also observe that in the beginning, the messaging was kind of wonky, and it's only now that they're really getting that message across?
I would have actually preferred it to happen sometime September. I think the pickup happened this year, January. So we'll see if there's enough time for that, what they call the pink wave, to really turn into a tsunami and sweep up voters. But yes, I do agree with your point, Fermina, that it could have come a little earlier if you were part of the VP Leni campaign team.
Yeah, but in our previous conversations with those in her campaign, they would also attribute this to the whole campaign being organic. But does that also tell you that there was no definite plan to begin with, and they were really only relying on how organic the volunteerism or the volunteers are going to be? What does that tell you about how they're strategizing this whole campaign?
Well, to inspire this organic movement, I think, is the strategy in and of itself. I think if there was no thinking or there was no, I want to call it a scientific process behind igniting this kind of a crusade, I don't think this crusade would be as prevalent. So I have to say that the campaign team of VP Leni, I'm sure, plotted this. I mean, they are behind. They are, at least they pushed it. They pushed the volunteerism to where it is now. Again, perhaps it could have come a bit earlier. We'll see if there's time to catch up if we're looking at it from the lens of the VP Leni campaign.
So what should she be doing as we speak in the run-up to May 9 for her to win this?
I think she's doing exactly what she needs to be doing in terms of creating more Leni. She's engaging her supporters to almost simulate a machinery by going house to house in every rally, in every engagement. She's always telling her supporters, it's not enough to attend these events. You should go out, convert people, go into your communities and capture and convince these people to join on the pink wave. I think that's exactly what she needs to be doing right now, because in fact she's already enlisted her daughters to go out as her alter ego/aspects, and she's in a good spot, I think.
Let's talk about Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, Alan. A lot of people saying this was his to lose. Do you agree with that?
You know, let me tell you, if I'm being very honest, I don't know if you recall his first ad wherein it's slice of life, wherein it's different people and speaking in his voice and mouthing a speech, a very famous speech that he did. When that ad came out, I was like, wow, this guy is going to win it. His branding was on point. He had a fantastic tagline, Ikaw na Isko, which is a brilliant play on words. And then somewhere along the way, I don't know exactly what happened. They abandoned that advertisement, which I thought was brilliant. which perfectly leveraged on it being an everyman. They no longer used the tagline, Ikaw na isko. They went with God first. I don't know exactly if that captures or will engage a voter to choose you. Doesn't really, again, if you want to follow that ideal messaging, it doesn't really say much about the candidate when he says God first. So I have no clue exactly what happened, why it's steered quite differently from the way they started.
Did you sort of get a glimpse of what might have happened to his campaign as you watched that press con unfold, Alan?
Wow. I have to take Manong Lito Banayo's word for it, but he did go off script. I'm sure his advisor had a very nice prepared messaging for him that day. I think that perhaps emotions just got the better of him and he started speaking off the cuff, as it were. So, I mean, I can't think of any political campaign strategist or communication strategist who would have advised that press con last Sunday. I really can't.
Well, we're talking about him as well as the preferred second choice. Do you think that after what happened that he's still going to be the preferred second choice?
Anecdotally, again, if you're just looking at the anecdotal evidence, I think a lot of there were a lot of shifters from his camp. Number one, he showed his political slip in a manner of speaking. You know, the way he was very deferential to former Senator Marcos Jr. and yet very aggressive and adversarial to VP Lenny. I think his political slip might have shown. So I'm not sure if that press con did him any good at all.
Can he still recover from this?
20 days left. I'm not sure. It might be a function of time. I'm not sure if you can dig yourself out of that self-dug hole in time for May 9. But we'll see. I mean, stranger things have happened in the Philippines.
Well, Senator Manny Pacquiao was a no-show in that press conference. Their campaign saying that it was divine intervention. But how do you see it? Is it going to boost the senator's numbers by not showing up?
Having, you know, dovetailing it from your earlier question, you know, Senator Manny might just overtake Manila Mayor Isko as the second choice with what he showed. You know, people are calling him a gentleman. They're saying he was very, very astute in doing that. They admired the fact that he refused to be wrangled up, so to speak, with the rest of the Easter press con candidates. So, you know, he might just pick up. I think that definitely gave him a boost. As well as Caliodi.
Well, we're talking about the candidates, but I want to wrap this conversation up by talking about us, the voters. 20 days before May 9, what should voters be thinking of? What should voters be doing at this point?
My goodness. Number one, voters should exercise the right to vote. That's a sacred, sacred responsibility. We should be very, very cognizant and protective of that vote, to ensure clean, honest, and fair election. But also, we should think about it like we're riding an airplane. We're choosing a pilot. This is life or death. Quite literally, for some members of our citizenry, this is life or death. Choose the best pilot, the candidate that can fly the plane, that can fly the plane well, that can take us to safety, has the best credentials. Don't let feelings get in the way of that choice. Let's be almost agnostic in our choice of vote. Pick a candidate based on that. That would be my best advice.
Veteran campaign strategist Alan Herman there joining us this afternoon. Always a pleasure talking to you, Alan. Take care and keep safe. I'll see you soon.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you for me.
And back here in the newsroom, President Rodrigo Duterte warns candidates against forming private armies less than a month before the May polls. In his weekly address, Duterte said he will again invoke the Alunan Doctrine, which limits the number of armed guards of politicians amid incidents of election-related violence. He also threatened to have violators arrested.
We will not countenance or allow yung disorder nor intimidation, nor violence. We will remain neutral and will see to it that the true will of the people lalabas sa election. More than two bodyguards would be considered a private army. So, kung sino may mga kandidato, you limit yourself. Pupuntahan kita and ask you why you cannot behave properly in this election.
The Philippine Police is working with the Commission on Elections in identifying election hotspots. In 2019, PNP data showed political killings nearly doubled compared to the previous year as the elections drew near. An update now on the ongoing overseas voting in New York City. The first batch of ballots was finally fed into vote counting machines at the Philippine consulate. This follows shipment delays of election paraphernalia and COVID infections among consular staff. There are 39,000 Filipino voters under the consulate. At least 50% of that number have received their ballots. Over in the West Coast, the first ballots were fed into vote counting machines last April 12th at the Philippine Consulate in San Francisco. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Russia begins its large-scale assault on eastern Ukraine. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We're back. Here's still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Two more presidential bets distance themselves from Manila Mayor Isko Moreno's call for Vice President Lenny Robredo to quit the race for Malacañang. Russia launches its major offensive in eastern Ukraine. And the World Bank slashing its global economic growth forecast this year amid the war in Ukraine. The large-scale attacks in eastern Ukraine have begun. The governor of the eastern region of Lugansk says Russian troops have advanced one step towards Kramatorsk, the capital of Donbas. Earlier, they captured the nearby town of Kremina, where four civilians died. Fighting also continues in the city of Rubizne, which has been under constant shelling since the early part of April. Moscow is trying to gain control of Donbas to forge a land corridor with annexed Crimea. Several missile strikes also hit the western city of Lviv Monday. At least seven people were reported killed. According to Russia's defense ministry, they destroyed a large depot of foreign weapons recently delivered to Ukraine by the U.S. and European countries. The ministry adds Russian troops destroyed a total of 16 Ukrainian military sites. The United Nations now calling on both sides to take all necessary efforts to avoid civilian casualties and losses to property.
The Secretary General strongly urges all parties to enact an urgent and immediate humanitarian ceasefire, which will enable safe and securing functioning of humanitarian corridors to help evacuate residents and also deliver life-saving humanitarian and medical assistance. Genuine negotiations must be given a chance to succeed and to bring a lasting peace.
Well, back here at home, after calling on Robredo to back out of the presidential race, Manila Mayor Isko Moreno heads back to the campaign trail. Our correspondent George Carino now joins us from Surigao del Sur. George, go ahead.
Actually, kami right now, where we have a chance to talk with Mayor Isko Moreno and we took his reaction from the statement of Secretary Lorenzo Gonzalez that Mayor Moreno may have been carried away, so quote, direct quote, open quote, Moreno may have been carried away during the pressure when he asked for Robredo to withdraw. I am not asking Robredo from the presidential race, vote vote. That was the statement given by former Secretary Roberto Gonzalez this morning at 10:30. in relation to last Sunday's press conference at the Manila Peninsula. And Mayor Moreno said he is standing by his words and he maintains his call for Vice President Lenny Robredo to withdraw from the presidential race. His very long explanation, he's blowing his call because what he calls, they are being attacked silently by the trolls of the yellows, according to Mayor Isko Moreno de Magoso. And there was no direct call by, he admits that there was no direct call by GP Robredo Senator Lasso to withdraw, the Secretary Gonzalez to withdraw, the Mayor Isko Moreno to withdraw from the race, but he said the vibes is being sent by trolls and other allies of GP Lenny Robredo. On the statement of Bobby Zamora that last Sunday's press conference was supposed to be a declaration that the candidates won't be backing out of the presidential race. Zamora is the campaign manager of Manny Pacquiao, and he said, to quote, Pacquiao wanted to declare he's not backing out of the presidential race. There was nothing achieved during Sunday's press conference. But Zamora said, or rather, Mayor Moreno said that he is respecting the opinion of the other people who are involved in last Sunday's press conference. But he will still maintain his call against Vice President Lenny Robredo. Carmina?
Yes, George. One question. Did the Manila mayor inform the other candidates that he was going to say such a thing, that that was going to be his script?
No, Carmina. He clarified that he did not involve the other candidates, and that statement was purely his own. He did not tell them what he was going to say. He did not involve them in that part, and that was all alone by Mayor Isko Moreno de Magoso.
All right. So just to follow up on that, George, by saying that, does that mean that he really had plans of saying what he said, and it wasn't really set off the cuff, and it wasn't just, you know, him being carried away? He really wanted to say what he said last Sunday.
Yes, he maintained every word that he said, and he reiterated it this morning in hearing Agusan del Norte, Carmina.
And does he feel, or what does he feel about what some experts, I talked to one campaign strategist, at least one, today, and he said, Alan Herman said that Mayor Isko Moreno lost a lot by saying that, by appearing in that press conference, and that him being the preferred second choice might not be the same the next time the survey results come out.
We haven't had a chance to discuss it, and it would be perfectly unfair for me to second guess Mayor Moreno, but it looks like he's trying to double up on his efforts for the campaign. Actually, from this day on until Thursday, he has a lot of new projects to do. From here in Caraga region, he will fly towards Bohol, and then after Bohol, he will go back to Manila for a campaign in the San Thursday. And on Friday, he will prepare for the presidential debate. But come Monday, he will be moving towards Visayas again. Carmina?
All right, thanks a lot. Our correspondent there, George Carino, shadowing the campaign of Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, one of the presidential bets this election season. Thanks, George. Take care and keep safe. More news overseas now. The Israeli military accuses Gaza militants of firing a rocket into Israel. That move raises fears that a wave of violence around Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque could escalate further. According to the Israeli military, they were able to intercept the rocket from the Gaza Strip. The Strip is a Palestinian enclave controlled by the Islamist group Hamas. The mosque was the site of Israeli-Palestinian violence over the weekend, where more than 170 people were hurt. Philippine Ambassador to China Chito Santa Romana passes away. His family said Santa Romana died in Huangsha in China's Anhui province on April 18th. He was 74. His cause of death was not revealed. The Philippine Foreign Affairs Department honored Santa Romana. It said under his tenure, ties between Manila and Beijing flourished despite differences. The DFA adds he will be remembered for his legacy of selfless service to Filipinos in the most challenging foreign post. China's ambassador to the Philippines also paid tribute to Santa Romana, saying he greatly values their time working together. He also thanked Santa Romana for the friendship and his undeniable contribution to the development of China-Philippines relations. Our condolences to... some Filipinos in Shanghai, China, calling on the Philippine government to help them return home. According to Leonisa Suba, a Filipino working in the epicenter of China's latest COVID outbreak, they have resorted to rationing their food supply because they cannot go out amid the strict lockdown. One of her companions also lost her job due to the lockdown.
Sana po humihingi po kami ng tulong sa government natin. Kung maaari nga po, sana makauwi na lang po kami para po yun, sa hirap po na dinanas po namin dito, talaga pong napakahirap po. Mm-hmm. Kaya gusto na po sana namin makauwi na lang or kung may makapagbigay po ng tulong na food. Yun po sana.
The Philippine Foreign Affairs Department has said the Chinese government denied them permission to deliver aid to Filipinos affected by the lockdown. Over in the U.S., a Florida judge has overturned the government's mask mandate in public transport. The judge called it unlawful, saying U.S. officials exceeded their authority. The lawsuit was filed last year by a group challenging state and federal vaccine and mask mandates across the country. The decision comes just days after the Biden administration extended by 15 days the mandate requiring individuals to wear masks on planes, trains, and other public transport.
So this is obviously a disappointing decision. The CDC continues recommending wearing a mask in public transit. As you know, this just came out this afternoon. So right now, the Department of Homeland Security, who would be implementing, and the CDC are reviewing the decision. And, of course, the Department of Justice would make any determinations about litigation.
Still ahead, the World Bank slashes its global economic growth forecast. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with us. Back with more news in business. The World Bank slashing its forecast for global economic growth this year, citing the conflict between Russia and Ukraine as one of the main reasons. It now expects the global economy to grow 3.2% in 2022, down by nearly a full percentage point from its previous estimate of a 4.1% growth. The projection was updated before policymakers from around the world head to Washington this week for the spring meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. World Bank President David Malpass cited what he called severe overlapping crises, namely Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the pandemic, and inflation as reasons for the downward revision. He adds the biggest component of the growth forecast reduction is a projected 4.1% economic contraction in Europe and Central Asian regions where Ukraine and Russia are located. The IMF also expected to cut its global growth forecast for 2022 when it releases its World Economic Outlook on Tuesday. Cash remittances sent by overseas Filipinos fall to a three-month low in February. February's total reached $2.5 billion, down from January's $2.6 billion. But it's 1.3% higher compared to the same period last year. The Philippine Central Bank says the slower growth was due to the reimposition of COVID restrictions in host countries of overseas Filipinos due to outbreaks of the Omicron variant. The U.S. posted the highest share of overall remittances, followed by Singapore, Saudi Arabia, Japan, and the U.K. Senator Sherwin Gatchalian vows to refile the vetoed SIM card registration bill if he is reelected. He says such a measure is needed to help combat fraudulent digital activities. He asserts the bill seeks to promote accountability in the use of SIM cards. Gatchalian also eyeing a separate discussion on mandatory social media registration. President Duterte vetoed the SIM card registration bill last week because of the inclusion of social media registration, which Malacanang said was not part of the original version of the bill. House lawmaker Rifi Biazon agrees with the president's veto.
Provisions were inserted during the bicameral conference committee because as I reviewed the versions passed by both the Senate and the House, they did not include social media registration. I think it would be best to just refile it again in the next Congress, remove that provision. And if we really want to pursue social media registration, that we just go into filing a specific bill for it.
In sports, the Philadelphia 76ers are now up 2-0 in their NBA first-round playoff series with the Toronto Raptors. MVP candidate Joel Embiid put the Sixers on his back as Philadelphia won Game 2, 112-97. The Sixers center scored 31 points and grabbed 11 rebounds, while fast-rising star Tyrese Maxey flirted with a triple-double. Game 3 of the best-of-seven series is on Wednesday in Toronto. Still in the NBA, Boston Celtics guard Marcus Smart is the season's Defensive Player of the Year. Smart received 257 points in the voting. He edged out Mikal Bridges of the Phoenix Suns for the award. Smart ranked 7th in steals per game. He received his trophy from NBA legend Gary Payton, who was the last guard to win Defensive Player of the Year honors back in 1996. Athletes, officials, and referees and other members of sports delegations participating in the 31st SEA Games not required to undergo quarantine. Vietnam's Ministry of Health said delegates must instead provide a negative COVID-19 test conducted in accredited clinics upon their arrival. They must also submit an online health declaration form and report their health status to organizers. Heads and deputy heads of sports delegations are exempted from the requirement to provide a negative COVID test. The SEA Games will kick off May 12th in Hanoi. In entertainment, ABS-CBN partners with streaming giant Netflix. Under their deal, new series Too Good to Be True will have an exclusive 72-hour window on the global streaming platform before its episodes hit free and pay television. Real-life couple Danielle Padilla and Catherine Bernardo will star in the upcoming series. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.